Welcome in to Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex Wolf. I'm joined by Gavin Shaw, as per usual. We got the Knicks versus the Rockets. Knicks lose 114 to 110, but there were some encouraging signs. Certainly some stuff to break into for the Knicks below that 61 points from James Harden, who did not break Melo's scoring record at the Garden. Thank God.
And then we're going with Alonzo Trier, who had a career night, 31 points. And then Mitchell Robinson, who was excellent offensively, and you can make the argument even better on defense.
And then lastly, we'll finish up with some of the bad things in the game. Surely there couldn't only be good things in a loss. So we'll talk about a little bit of Dr. Moutier and Mr. Boutier showing his head again, and some Tim Hardaway disappearing act. And we'll bring you a new segment called Overtime, where we're going to be breaking down some of the more miscellaneous moments from tonight's game that don't really have anything to do with anything other than our curiosity. All that coming up and more on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting at one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Milikina.
What he does is contagious, Mike.
To Trier. Trier drives. Oh! Alonzo Trier. Hander across the lane. The Porzingis fires up a three. Boom! That one goes down and the game is tied.
Becomes infectious.
So welcome in. You're Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex Wolf. He's Gavin Shaw. And we're breaking down this Rockets and Knicks game. 114 to 110, the Rockets won. James Harden will steal most of the headlines with his 61 points, which I am very happy to say did not break Melo's 62 at the Garden. I got very, very worried for a minute that someone who was not a Knick was going to own that record again. Very happy to see that he only tied Kobe instead of surpassing Kobe and Melo. So that's definitely good to see. But from a Knicks fan perspective, Harden's performance was not the only story tonight. There was definitely a lot of things to be positive about. I would say probably Alonzo Trier has got to be your guy. And we'll touch more on him in the next segment. But 31 points, new career high for him. And 10 boards, which is also very impressive. Shot 12 of 18 from the floor. I mean, I don't know about you, Gavin. That was probably the biggest plus point to me.
Oh, no, I was going to say just in general, and again, I've been adding this qualifier all year, so why not keep doing it? I haven't watched every Knicks game this season. I have a huge blind stretch, but this was my favorite Knicks game of the season. If they could have pulled it out, it would have been a lot better. I know on this pod, we're usually both kind of clinicians, and we're always of the opinion the best thing you can do is have a close, heartbreaking loss and feel like shit after a game. But this one, I kind of wanted them to win just because of, even though I love James Harden because he is a Sun Devil like myself. I had some negative feelings towards him tonight, and I just kind of out of spite wanted to beat him. And also, this game was at least down the stretch winnable in a lot of ways for the Knicks, and it was kind of a painful ending. And just given, I mean, that all time like excellent performance by Trier, I said it in the tease that I've been really negative on him of late, and he was just outstanding. Like, you got to give it up to him. And then the game Mitchell Robinson had, another guy we'll get to more in the second segment. I just thought this was a game that it would have been really good for morale if they had won, and then maybe Enes Kanter wouldn't want to leave if they had pulled it out. So that was the worst news of the night.
I do not care about Enes Kanter anymore. I can't even bring myself to care at this point. You know what? We were going to bring this up later during the bad stuff, but like, I don't even want to fucking do that. Like, I'm just going to bring it up now just so we can get it out of the way. Kanter got a DNP CD and he's like all twisted up about it. And he made some comment. I'm not even going to find the full quote because I just don't care enough to anymore. But he basically said like that the Knicks had said that they were going to start him at the beginning of the day. And then by the time game time rolled around that they didn't. And he's like, that's messed up, man. Like, you know, I want to be playing. And if they're not going to play me here, then send me somewhere where I can play. Or I don't know if he said send me somewhere, but whatever. Same crap.
His quote was something like either I want to play or you got to let me play. Which, like, yeah. Didn't really, like, it wasn't, like, all that coherent. But you got the implication was pretty clear.
Yeah. So screw him. Screw
but
that.
I'm glad we got it out of the way. But this was like, this game had like legitimately like a great ending. Like we can talk about that a little bit. Like the end of the last like 4 minutes of the fourth quarter was like edge of your couch stuff. Like the Mitchell Robinson, he had this, and again we'll get into this a little more in the second segment, but this great chase down block on Eric Gordon, and then he had another one, his second of the game on Harden, shooting a step back three. And then the play where P.J. Tucker, right after Trier scored, he refused to touch the inbound. I was broadcasting a game earlier this season where a guy dunked on his own basket. That was about, given the fact that this was an NBA game, that was about equally as weird. Where he was just like refused. He was like, no. He like, did you see like how he like kind of stuck his arms behind his body? Like he thought like it was literally like the situation where a guy airballs it and is like, I can't touch it. And like looking at his teammates to bail him out. And Eric Gordon's reaction was just so priceless as well. Just given the context and how close the game was, I don't think I've seen a weirder NBA moment this year than that.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. Is, you know, the sequence where, you know, it was a tight game. It had no business being tight, but the Knicks tightened it up, you know, and the Rockets really should be ashamed of themselves that they let the Knicks get it that close. And then, yeah, they scored. I forget who scored for the Knicks right before that. I think it was Trier. And then they go to inbound the ball to Tucker, and he just stood there. And it seemed almost like he thought, I think Clyde said it, on the broadcast, that it almost seemed like he thought he was playing defense for a second. And, you know, it was just weird, man. I can't even like come up with words for it. Cause how are you, especially a guy who's such a vet like PJ Tucker, how are you so unaware of the situation that you let the ball come in and you don't even make an attempt to touch it? It was peculiar. So Vonleh picked it up and scored it. And I think that brought the Knicks within two, if I'm not mistaken at that point. It was bizarre. Only way I can think of to describe it. I think you're correct. It's got to be one of the more head-scratching moves that I've seen so far in the NBA this year.
Well, the last 2 minutes as a whole were nuts. Because, like, keep in mind, like, the last 2 minutes, like, in real time, I think ended up, at least, like, how I was watching, took about 20. And, like, you forget, like it felt like Fizdale got ejected with, like, 8 minutes left. Fizdale got ejected with, I'm trying to scroll and find, with I think 108 left in the game. Yeah, exactly 1 minute and 8 seconds left in the game. And then all this stuff happens after that. Harden, like, hits the technical. Then Trier comes back down. He has, like, the really nice ball fake, and it shoots it exactly at the right time. Like, a play, like, again, obviously he's an older rookie, but, like, a play you just don't expect a rookie to make in that situation. And then even more importantly, steps up. Hits all three free throws. Then you have Tucker inexplicably refusing to touch the ball. Vonleh comes up with it, makes kind of a tough layup where he almost got bumped. Then Moutier, who sucked the whole game, comes back down, draws like a ridiculous foul. Like the shot like would have been like, I guess he like really got bumped, so maybe it would have been closer to the basket, but it was him like fading out of play and like forcing up a floater. He makes both free throws. Knicks go up by one. The Garden is like absolutely electric. Like Mike Breen is in peak form at this point. Harden gets like an absolute like BS foul. Like I don't know what you thought of that, but like it seemed like Hardaway was like kind of in position. Harden just like bumps into him and completely flops. I think Fizdale, if he could have, he would have gotten ejected again, and they would have had to put him in like a straitjacket or something. Trier like absolutely torches Tucker with like this beautiful hesitation move where he stepped back and it looked like he was going to do the same thing where he'd try to draw a foul on the three again and like just kind of pauses in his dribble for a sec. Tucker totally bites and it gets right by him. Does like that little like running back like tuck, rock the cradle layup. Eric Gordon comes down. Tim Hardaway makes this idiotic play where he doesn't like he should have. I mean, like the first thing you learn about playing defense when you first learn basketball is you watch the man in the ball and he's only looking at Harden. And because of that, he picked I can't remember who the other defender was. I think it was Trier out of the play. Gordon just drains a three and then Vonleh loses the ball. Harden goes back down and dunks it. I know I just went through like it feels like the whole game. That was just the final minute of this game. That's how nuts this ending was.
Yeah, it was crazy. I'm glad you took such diligent notes. I feel like I took shitty notes today. I don't know. I got too caught up in the moment, and I was just enjoying it as it was happening. And now that you mention all those plays, I'm like, damn, that was really like the last minute of the game.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It was so quick. It was just like rapid fire. It was like you were playing like an arcade game, like NBA Jam or something, just like sprinting up and down the floor, jacking these weird-ass shots, except for like in NBA Jam, there wasn't foul calls every 3 seconds. I still can't, you know, it, as mind-boggling as the PJ Tucker thing with not touching the ball was, I couldn't believe that he bit on Trier's three-point fake as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like with how experienced of a defender he is, and the fact that he has to practice with James Harden every single day, well, not every day, but you know what I mean. You would think that he would not bite that, you know, coming from a rookie. But it was just, it was crazy. I couldn't believe how boneheaded the Rockets were down the stretch. And I legitimately thought they were going to blow it. Like, it hit those last couple seconds when the Knicks took that little lead. Whatever it was, 1 point, I think.
Yeah, it was 1-7.
On the Moutier free throws. And I thought that they were going to blow it. I thought the Knicks were going to score one more bucket and end up winning by three. And luckily, sort of, I guess, the Rockets were able to pull it out. But, yeah, it was, I don't know, just strange. Like, I keep not being able to find words for this game just because that last little bit was some of the crazier basketball I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious because I think you're even, like, you're, like, a little bit more rational than I am with the tank stuff. At points, did you want the Knicks to win at the end of the game, or did you give kind of, like, a little fist bump as Harden was, like, dunking at the end?
I had, like, mixed emotions. No, I definitely didn't fist bump for the Harden dunk, except for to realize that that meant that he couldn't break or tie Melo's scoring record because with 3 seconds left, they weren't getting the ball back. So that part I was kind of happy about. I don't know. I felt some weird emotions during this game. Like, for the beginning, when they got out to that huge lead, I was like, oh, they're going to blow it. But then they were holding on to the lead for a little bit, and I said, you know what? Maybe I'd be into a win for this one. And then they started blowing it, and they got down by whatever it was, like 10 points or whatever it was to the Rockets there. And then I was like, oh, well, you know what? It was good while it lasted, but I'll take the loss today. And then right at the very end there, when it was all like frantic pace, I kind of just became at peace with whatever would happen. I would say in the long run, I'm probably happy for the loss, just because who knows how things are going to shake down at the end of the season. But all I know is that, you know, I don't want to look back and be like one loss short like we have been before.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, well, that was that James Harden game when Harden scored 60 points and they still managed to beat them somehow.
How absurd would that have been?
That
encapsulates it perfectly. It would have been nuts.
I want to get back to one thing real quick. I think we kind of buried the lead here. You said you enjoy watching James Harden play basketball. Is that just a school pride thing? Like, I hope that's just.
Yeah, I was just saying, thing. I'm more root for him than like I will say this. Like, I think watching him enough over the years, and I think a lot of people probably feel this way. I admire some of the subtlety and intricacies of his game, and just how, like, I mean, I admire his ability to just mystify NBA defenders. And like you heard, and I think actually, like, and we can talk about this now, we can talk about it as we go on. The Knicks actually did like a really good job overall on him in the second half. He was only 6-17 from the field for the game, as much as and some of this was right. Like, Clyde complained about them over contesting on threes. He was just 5-20 from 3-point range. But I guess what I was gonna say is, like, I admire the fact that he so consistently makes NBA defenders look stupid. And you see, like, on these shows, like The Jump just had this whole segment of Scottie Pippen talking about how he would defend Harden. And like, I'm sure like Scottie would do a better job than most on him, but it's like all these like teams like talk about defending him as if it's like these like simple adjustments, and like maybe not teams, but like broadcasters and media in general. And like, Clyde's like, oh, you just got to be smart. Like, you can't stick your hand in there. And yet the fact that it's not just the boneheaded Knicks making these mistakes. It's every single team that's giving up 50 or 60 to him. And like the fact that like, one, his teammates seem to like him despite that, and two, that, I mean, they've been winning with like largely G League contributors, and Kenneth Faried, the mammal, as Clyde would call him, suddenly playing a really big role. I think that's extremely impressive. So I guess aesthetically, I don't always enjoy it, but intellectually, I can admire it.
I mean, I think you could definitely make a case that he sort of hacked the game in a way with the way that he plays. Like, yeah. he's like the epitome of what analytics Twitter, you know, wants the game to be played as, you know what I mean? Like, it's like three pointer or get to the hoop or get those free throws. And like, that's it. It's like, he's like, And it makes sense that Daryl Morey, like Mr. Original OG stat nerd, would be the guy that's picked him up and has had Harden blossom under him like this. But I don't know. I find his game to be really not aesthetically pleasing. And it just seems like, I don't know. It seems like Harden practices his dribbles and then he practices acting classes.
Yeah.
After he's done with that at every practice, because there's not a single time that he goes into the lane that he's not throwing his head back and, you know, just throwing himself at people with the intent of drawing a foul or something. I just don't find it to be enjoyable to watch, but that's just me. I don't know. I want to start talking about things I did enjoy watching though. So I feel like we should probably hop to segment two and start talking about the kids, because this game belonged to the kids. So we'll take a quick break and then we'll be right back on Locked On Knicks. Talk about Trier, Mitchell Robinson, et cetera, et cetera.
Welcome back into Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf here with you. It was a heartbreaking 114-110 defeat at the hands of the Houston Rockets. James Harden scored 61, but we have talked about that enough. Let's get into it with Alonzo Trier. Obviously, we broke down some of the highlights in the first segment. A career-high 31 points, efficient 12 of 18 from the field. Also had 10 rebounds, 3 assists. I know last game we saw a little bit of this with the way he was getting into the lane and getting in particular to the foul line. But this was the first time since he got hurt. And again, I missed some games last week. So maybe he was showing signs of this, which I saw people on Twitter were kind of saying. But at least as far as I've seen, this is kind of the first game where like he fully had like that juice back that he had earlier in the season and that explosion. And to me, like that was kind of the most frustrating part of the last couple of weeks. Like it wasn't even that like his jumper wasn't falling. These like I kind of figured that would be like hit and miss as he was trying to get back into form in limited minutes, but he just didn't seem to have the same burst that he had in the first half of the year. And it wasn't really like in college, like he could beat guys off the dribble, but it was almost more because he was crafty than because he was like uniquely athletic. And that, I think that was a big part of the reason that like he wasn't drafted this past offseason. But he really had that juice back, and his ability to leverage the fact that he was shooting it well into blow bys on defenders at the caliber of a PJ Tucker, I thought was just outstanding, and to me at least the most impressive part of his game tonight.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely part of it, and he's always going to have sort of the ISO part of his game, but I think that the real thing that creates success for him is getting away from that and playing within a team concept. Like the times that Trier really doesn't play well is when it seems like he's, if he starts, usually it's if he starts off a little bit slow from the floor and he doesn't hit a few shots right away, then he starts going into ISO mode because he's just trying to get himself going before anything else. But the last few games he's had a shot going right away, and hopefully he learns over time to kind of just, you know, roll with it, I guess, and not have to have that shot going to be able to still play within the team concept. Kind of similar to like Dotson. You know, we always praise Dotson for that. Obviously different skill sets between the two. Like Dotson has nowhere near the talent off the dribble that Trier does. So it's, you know, it's not a direct comparison. But I mean, Trier tonight, he had a number of plays. One that sticks out to me was it was like simultaneously my favorite and least favorite play at one point, because Frank brought the ball down and Frank was distributing pretty well at 0 points tonight, but that wasn't really the story. The story was more the defense on Harden and the fact that he was distributing as well as he was, but he brought the ball down the floor and he gets a switch and he gets Fareed on him and then just stops there. And Trier at first looks like he's going to try to like run behind Frank to just kind of grab the ball and reset the offense. But then very smartly looked to the right and said, oh, there's a wide open lane to the hoop right next to me here. And just like made a beeline for the hoop, and Frank hit him with this perfect like pinpoint pass to lead him right to the hoop. And that was just one of those plays that I thought was emblematic of like good Trier tonight. And that's the sort of stuff I like to see. He continued also with getting an okay amount of free throw attempts. He had 5 free throw attempts, which is good. And last game, obviously, he went 10 of 10. This game, he goes 5 of 5. So he's 15 of 15 in his last two games from the free throw line, which is great to see. I mean, you could argue, I don't know, to me, tonight, it was almost like Trier was playing a more aesthetically pleasing version of the game that Harden was playing, kind of. Like, he kind of played a Harden style, but also made some cuts and played some off ball and did that sort of stuff and didn't need the ball in his hands 100% of the time to impact the game, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, I thought, and again, this is something that's like, it didn't even necessarily surprise me because we really did see a little bit of this out of him in the first part of the season. But just the fact that like he like had like the testicular fortitude to go back and forth with Harden with like the run that Harden is on right now. It's like, this guy is like tearing up the NBA, like just from a pure scoring perspective in a way we haven't seen since Kobe in like 05, 06. So that's like, that's unique what James Harden is doing right now. And the fact that like Trier, like at MSG, which I think almost makes it like better in a way, because like it's like such a grand stage, I guess, to do it on, was like going back and forth with him. And the fact, I mean, we were just joking about it like last segment, like how funny it would be if Harden had scored 60 and the Knicks had somehow won. But it really was, because like Trier was like, at least like down the stretch in the second half where Harden wasn't playing that well, like Trier was like matching him point to point. And I guess, speaking of similarities with Harden, like I think you hit on a good point there. Like we talked about it a little bit last segment, but just the way he manipulated PJ Tucker off the dribble, like first, like in the ball fake into like the three free throws. And like that was, again, a play just in terms of like him not forcing up the initial shot and being patient enough to, and being confident enough to bet on the fact that he could get Trier to bite on that pump fake was really good. And then the very next play, he builds on that move by using that little hesitation dribble where it looked like he was stepping back into a three, and Tucker was so ready to jump out on the initial attempt. He's like, okay, I got you figured out. You're going to try this again. Like good, like far chance rook. And then instead Trier just goes right by him and gets that layup. Like that combination was great. And then another way I saw it was, and I would never say this in a long-term sense, at least in regards to Trier, but I thought his chemistry with Mitchell Robinson tonight, it honestly reminded me of like what we've seen out of Harden and Clint Capella over the last couple of years, where you just have this dynamic off the dribble scoring guard that every time he has the ball, like the entire defense is focused on him. And he's able to leverage that with just this like ridiculously athletic, almost alien-esque center that you can throw a lob wherever to and catch it. Like the lob and like he had to Mitch in the first half, where kind of just got over the defense and it wasn't a perfect pass, but Mitch is such a good athlete. He was able to catch it on like a small jump, and like his arms are so long, he could still dunk it in. It's little plays like that. And I would almost hope Trier like continues to push himself more in that direction and to be even more aggressive with throwing lobs to Robinson on those plays, because there were a couple different situations where he could have made an extra pass to Robinson. And then there was one with Hardaway in transition and one with Nyla Keene in the pick and roll where it would have been the right play. And he was hot tonight and he made shots anyways. But if he can just continue to balance out his game between this ISO scoring and when his talent is so good that he's able to manipulate a defense to recognize that and make the right pass, he can be a really, really good player.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to get back to your point about him with Mitch, I mean, I thought the best lineup of the whole night was, there was a lineup out there, Frank, Trier, Dotson, Knox, and Mitchell Robinson, literally all rookies and sophomores. And I thought they played the most composed basketball of the whole night out there. I mean, every single guy in that unit just knew what their job was and did it properly. And I mean, I would say the most fun stretch of basketball the Knicks played tonight, in part because of Trier's chemistry with Robinson. You saw a little bit of chemistry with Frank with Robinson. Knox finally kind of got himself going in that lineup tonight, because Knox was struggling through the first couple quarters and then sort of figured it out in the second half. I'll look and see, kind of curious what his just second half numbers were.
Yeah, but I mean, while you're looking that up, to your point on that, the starters, which were Vonleh, Thomas, Knox, Moody, and Hardaway, they were all at least minus 11. Thomas was minus 19 in 14 minutes. The Robinson, Nyla Keene, Trier, Dotson quartet were plus 12, plus 8, plus 19, plus 15, respectively. So, yeah. I mean, it was entirely, like, the eye test was entirely backed up statistically.
And I guess my memory was a little better. Or my memories of it were a little better for Knox. He only shot, it looks like, two of eight in the second half, but that's okay. I mean, honestly, it was kind of a rough game for him overall, but I thought that some of the best looks for him were generated in that all young guy lineup. It's definitely one that I want to see more going forward, because I mean, go figure, that lineup with three of arguably your team's best defenders, apologies to Vonleh, it did well. I mean, you got Mitch in the paint who can switch onto anybody and defend them. I mean, clearly, as he showed with Harden a number of times tonight, who's like one of the hardest covers in the league. Then you got Ntilikina, who played Harden very well as well. And then Dotson, who kind of is just that like quintessential good team defender. And then like Trier, I think, is elevated by guys like that because he could take the weaker assignments on defense and or do spot duty on the tougher assignments. It was good overall. I mean, Knox obviously still has his struggles on defense, but that lineup in general, I just thought was very well balanced. And while those guys are young and, you know, you certainly, if you put those guys out there consistently, you're not necessarily going to see as good of results as you saw tonight because they're young and they're prone to making mistakes and stuff. I thought that they did well enough tonight that you can definitely make a case for them getting some serious run for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm 110% with you. That was like my almost in some ways my biggest takeaway from the night. Just like the energy and passion that group brought. It when I was watching it, and again, this is I think why I would say like it was my favorite Knicks game all year. Like even beyond that, just wacky wild minute. It almost felt like an NCAA like tournament game, like single elimination March Madness. It was just that kind of passion and energy, and Robinson just going all out, like arms fully extended to like block Eric Gordon when he had already gotten by him, and some of the plays, like there was that one play, like this was honestly like not from my mind one of the best plays of the entire season, where Frank got the steal, saved the ball from going out of bounds. I think it was Gordon like tried to steal it right back from him. Frank goes behind his back, totally loses him, throws it up the court to Robinson, one dribble, dunks from like 3-4 feet out. It was just like it was the perfect encapsulation of the defense those two bring to the floor and the energy and the hustle up the floor. And it was just so far antithetical to what we see from like Enes Kanter and like Hardaway playing together. Not to take shots at those guys. Like they do things right. They have some positives to them, but it was just such a stark contrast to that. And it was so much more enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. And I mean, you gotta give Hardaway his credit where it was due today. I mean, at least in the first half, he was playing really, really well. I mean, there was a point in the first half where he was basically going shot for shot with Harden.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because Trier just kind of picked up that mantle in the second half when Hardaway sort of wasn't playing as well. Fizdale also made kind of a weird decision to put Hardaway back in there in the fourth. Like Hardaway, Vonleh, and then eventually Moutier, all three of which were not having their best games, certainly. I mean, I don't think Vonleh didn't do anything that particularly rubbed me the wrong way in the game, but it just wasn't one of his best games overall. And then Hardaway in the second half was not playing great. Moutier was also not playing great. I mean, it was just kind of a strange coaching decision. But Hardaway, at least for the first half, kind of looked like he had found his mojo again. Maybe enough to entice some team to trade for him. I don't know. We're getting close to the trade deadline, so I'm starting to get kind of itchy.
Yeah,
for someone getting traded here. But there was, I mean, this will be something for another show, but there was a report from Shams earlier today that said that there's more teams trying to buy right now than there are teams selling as far as assets go at the trade deadline this year. So that certainly bodes well for the Knicks. I mean, there might be some surprises in store for us. So hopefully guys like Hardaway and Vonleh and all them keep their play up over these next couple weeks, and maybe we'll see some sort of surprise around the trade deadline.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something worth watching out for. And I think in about a week or two, I know we're having more of a generic mailbag episode this week, but we're going to do a trade specific mailbag. And I think that'll get particularly wild, and there'll be like a lot of feistiness on both ends of the spectrum on trading someone like Hardaway. So I'm kind of excited for that. But I guess just to wrap up this conversation, we've kind of danced around it and we mentioned him a couple of times, but this just an awesome game from Mitchell Robinson. And maybe it's recency bias, but again, I would argue one of his best on the season. 10 points, perfect 5 of 5 from the field. I mean, all he does is dunk. So I mean, the field goal percentage in and of itself isn't necessarily that impressive. But again, just the kind of threat he presents on lobs. And I would argue if I was David Fizdale, like I would be telling my guards, and like I guess like my one hesitancy here is like I feel like just with the way he's built right now, he's kind of injury prone, and I wouldn't want to get him injured by throwing him a lob that's maybe a little too ambitious and someone undercuts him. But if I was Fizdale, I'd tell my guards, like, just like honestly, like I'm never going to get mad at you for throwing a lob to Robinson, because just with his reach and verticality, there's almost no such thing as a bad pass. And there are times where he has a slight edge on someone where they don't throw it. And I certainly think they could. And then defensively, this game was just like, I mean, I think we got like a sneak peek at the future tonight with him being switched onto Harden, and like Harden just assuming that he had enough room to get a three-pointer off, not once, but twice, because that's what Harden does to everyone. He does that step back, and he just has room. And the muscle memory for him is that that's going to work every single time, at least in the sense that he will get his shot off. And twice, Robinson blocked him on those shots. And I mentioned it earlier, but the recovery on Gordon, like that was one of the best defensive plays, like the Knicks, or like I've even seen in the NBA all year, because Gordon got like a clear step on him. And again, it's like that alien reach. Like he gets the balls that typical NBA centers just don't get you. And that's exceptional. And it really is exciting going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I really loved the Harden blocks. Nothing made me happier than that, because Harden, I mean, he started the game off with a 4-point play. He got Moutier to foul him. And then he had another one. I want to say the second one was Trier that fouled him. And, you know, he had 2 4-point plays in the first half, and just all night he was doing that, where he was getting that step back three and getting guys to lean in towards him to try to block it, and then kind of leaning his body forward a little bit. And it's just like, it's like his signature move. It's like part of how he gets his free throws. But just to see him, I don't know, just be like bamboozled by Robinson was just really funny to me, because yeah. Robinson is just, he's unlike anybody else. You know, he has this weird ability and length and springiness without overdoing it to just like annihilate 3-point shooters at the line. It's become like his signature play over his rookie season is the 3-point line block, of shutting down these guys that, you know, think that they can get off a clean look in front of him and just absolutely cannot. So it was fun to see him do that sort of against one of the best that there is as far as creating his own looks out on the perimeter and ISOing and all that. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's basically my thoughts on him too, though, what you said. I will bring up, I saw one good tweet tonight that I'll shout out because he's a friend of the show. Zach Deluzio of PNT and Knicks Film School tweeted out at one point about Robinson at this point, like, you got to play him just because the ability that he has around the rim with, you know, the finishing on the lobs and all that is almost getting to the point where it's almost as good as like having a really, really good 3-point shooter that draws people out to the 3-point line. Like, he demands attention inside now. There's no really denying it. And he's kind of a floor spacer in his own regard, in that he could finally kind of open up the perimeter for the Knicks a little bit, which I'm sure would be nice and something that would be welcomed. So I hope we see lots and lots more playtime for him. Obvious caveat being that he's, you know, fouled out of his last two games, and fouling out seems to be an issue for him. So he has to correct himself in some regards to stop making the ticky-tack fouls and all that stuff. And then, you know, hopefully we can start seeing him more like 25, 30 minutes a game for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I think that's a great note to wrap up this segment on. Again, kind of a brutal, heartbreaking loss, but a lot to be excited about. And we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about some of the disappointments of the night, particularly Emmanuel Moutier, and then we'll get into our new segment, Overtime, that next on the Locked On Knicks podcast.
All right, welcome back in to Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex Wolf. He's Gavin Trawl. We should probably let you guys know real quick, we are doing a mailbag episode this weekend. We're going to record one this weekend, probably for next Monday-ish. Maybe we'll call that Mailbag Monday or something like that. We should start doing something like that. That would be nice. But at any rate, if you want to reach out to us, feel free to send us mailbag questions either at Locked On Knicks on Twitter or LockedOnKnicks@gmail.com if you want to send them via the old e-snail mail. But whatever you're feeling, hit us up, because I personally, I want the more absurd questions, the better, because this point in the season, it's getting hard to take serious basketball questions seriously because there's just not really too much serious basketball being played. I like silly things. I like making up, you know, weird Knicks fan fictions and crap. So I don't know about you, Gavin, but those are my questions.
I saw the one that we got about, I think it was which Knick would be most likely to return their food if they didn't like it and which Knick would be most likely to eat it anyways. And like stuff in that vein is perfect. Like any question that allows me to make underlying assumptions about these guys' personalities based on the way they play basketball or say stuff I know about Enes Kanter because I feel like I know everything there is to know about him at this point is just great.
Yeah, and please, listeners, save your trade idea ones or send them to us anyway if you want, but just know we're going to ignore them for this week and then pick those up a little closer to the trade deadline because we're going to do an extra special trade deadline mailbag special, which it should be pretty fun because I freaking love the trade machine and fake trades, so it'll be a good time. But at any rate, let's get back into business here. So tonight, I would say probably I think we're in agreeance on this. Probably the most disappointing performance tonight was there wasn't even really any Dr. Moutier. It was kind of just all Mr. Moutier tonight. It was not a great showing for Moutier, despite I guess his pure like box score numbers aren't the worst that he's ever put up. But 14 points on 4-9 shooting. 4 rebounds, 2 assists, but a ghastly 7 turnovers tonight. He just really was kind of out of sorts, it seemed like. I don't specifically have it written down, but I feel like part of the reason that James Harden, noted defensive, not that great guy, ended up with 5 steals is probably a lot due to Moutier, if I had to put my finger on it.
Yeah, this is part of like a fairly substantial stretch for him of not playing very well. Ned7821 first put me onto this on Twitter, so shout out to Ned. And he was just talking about like Moutier's like recent assist to turnover stretch, but I think it wasn't including this last game. You take this game into account over the last 5 now, 13 assists, 19 turnovers, which is not good. And there was this whole debate between our guy Schwinny Poo and our guy Jonathan Macri, both kind of debating like whether or not Frank should have been in there for Moutier, or I think they might have been in agreement on that, but it was like whether or not like Fizdale like consciously like made the wrong decision or whether or not it was tanking. But like either way, like I mean, I think this is kind of integral to that argument, the fact that like Moutier like does put up better box score numbers and he is more likely to get you a bucket down the stretch than Frank is. And as Frank went scoreless for, I think this was the 4th time in his career that he had played at least 20 minutes and hadn't scored a single point, which obviously isn't good. But you take all that into account and you take into account Moutier having 14 and you look Moutier minus 11 for the game, Frank plus 8. And it just, and it, I think again, that kind of backs up our eye test that just intuitively you feel like Frank has a more positive impact out there than Moutier does. I will say specific things on Moutier in the first half that really frustrated me. There were 2 times where he ended up on Harden, where he forced Harden to his left hand. And it was almost like that's something that he just does with every player. And he forgot that like the most famous left-handed player in the NBA, probably like when it will come down to it, like one of the 2 or 3 best lefties of all time, is a lefty. And Harden both times was just like, it was almost like he paused, like, are you serious right now? And then just like went right by him and laid it in. So I thought that was ridiculous. I will give Moutier a little bit of credit because after he missed like a really crucial layup with about 4 minutes left that would have cut the lead to, I think, either 2 or 4. He came back. He made those free throws down the stretch. He had like a super athletic layup with like 2, 2.5 minutes left. So he was actually okay after, at least offensively, after Fizdale put him back in. But all in all, just like another bad night for him. And it's part of a larger trend where, again, he hasn't like totally fallen off scoring the basketball. But in terms of pure point guard abilities, he's really been a wreck over the last couple of games.
Yeah. I don't even know if he's long-term a guy that could even play point guard like for the rest of his career. I don't know. I feel like some team is going to – maybe it's the Knicks. I don't know. If the Knicks bring him back, I wouldn't want him to be – I don't want their thought of him to be any more than a backup point guard, like just kind of the pure scoring guard role. I don't even know who to reckon him to. Like a non-3-point shooting Lou Williams or something. I don't know. But I wouldn't want him like my lead guard on the team because he definitely, there's just something, he gets the ball moving in some ways, but he's not like a facilitator. You know, he's not making the pass get the guy the bucket, just kind of getting the ball moving so that someone else can get the guy the pass to get him the bucket, basically. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I think that maybe he might end up being like a two guard or something, or like viewed more as a two guard. Like if any team would ever want to trot him out there to start, I just need someone out there that's a little more focused on hitting the pinpoint passes, I guess, and making the assist type passes. Whereas Moutier, I don't think is necessarily always focused on that. I don't know. I feel like I'm rambling a bit on him. I just have weird feelings about Moutier lately. I don't know what to make of him. I don't know what I want the Knicks to do with him. I kind of hope they just trade him so that we don't even have to make these decisions at this point. Just send him somewhere else. Let him be someone else's, you know, potential problem down the line or whatever. Because it's been boggling my mind a little bit lately because he does something so well. Like he's getting into the lane and his finishing has been better and all that. But so many other things he doesn't do well. Like you said, just general low defensive IQ, low defensive ability, and just a general lack of being like a pure distributor just are kind of all turnoffs with him.
Yeah, I think it's almost like square peg, like round hole a little bit. The problem with Moutier is like, I think you could say that for like almost any team he's on. Like I don't want to be like hypocritical because I was really high on him after that last stretch. And I think I this is like probably one of my worst tendencies as a basketball podcaster, but like I tend to overreact to like 1 month of like really good basketball, and he did have 1 month of really, really good basketball. But I mean, it's kind of the same issues that we've always had with Moutier, and like when they initially traded for him from Denver, why I was kind of hesitant to even like give him much of a chance is just because stylistically he doesn't cleanly fit in any way in any system. And I guess again, like his long-term upside is kind of what you said, is sort of a combo guard coming off the bench, like kind of like a Lou Williams. And if he continues to refine his jumper and continues to get better around the rim, I think he could be really effective in that role. And maybe, I mean, like, I guess physically, like a better comparison would be like a Tyreke Evans type. I just don't know how confident I am that he'll ever reach that point. But again, as we always say with these guys, still super young, and there's still a window for him there. I'm not sure if I need that to be with the Knicks. All right, do you want to go do our new segment overtime, or any final thoughts from the game?
Well, just my final Moutier thought. I would just say, like, don't get me wrong on him. Like, I don't think he's bad per se. Like, bad is like a not the word I would use to describe him. He's like good in his own sort of weird way, but it's certainly an improvement, because at the end of last season, I didn't think he was going to even necessarily make the team this year. Like, and with how he played in preseason and all that, I thought that he was just terrible. And now he's at least proven to be an NBA player. I just don't know what that long-term NBA player is. I don't know. It's just weird. I'm probably going to bring this up at least 10 more times unless the Knicks trade him. But
yeah,
he's an intriguing player. Very strange guy.
Right. I'm with you on that. It's we'll keep thinking better ways to describe it. Okay. All right. New segment called Overtime, where I realized I've just been slipping these in at random points in the podcast, and I wanted to keep them organized. We will just make observations that weren't kind of inherently related to basketball, but just kind of the subtle funny things of the game. I want to say shout out to Zach Lowe on this, because I feel like he's the best in the NBA at just pointing out the oddities and the weird humor you can find in them. And I think the NBA in general is the best league for producing these things. So I want to be able to note them game in and game out. All right. So for this edition of Overtime, the one that stood out to me the most was one we already mentioned, was Clyde calling Ken Fareed the mammal. I just started cracking up when he did it, and I know what he's going for. And I do admire, because obviously, like, I think Clyde is like, I think, isn't he? He's like 70 at this point, right? So he's gonna get things wrong sometimes. But like Breen is always, he's so tactful about pointing it out. Like, he's never like, oh, it's actually this. Like, he'll just kind of like quietly like say like the next possession, like Fareed just said, oh, he's like, there goes the mammal. And then Clyde was like, Kenneth Fareed's nickname in Denver was the Manimal. And then he just continues with his play-by-play. So I love that mistake from Clyde, and I love the way Breen corrected him so tactfully.
Yeah, I actually missed that one. I don't know if I was like, you know, being a total millennial and sending a tweet at that time or whatever, but that one escaped me and I was very glad that you tweeted it out so I could enjoy it, because I totally missed that one and I feel like that would have made me crack up if I heard that one live.
Really good.
But I wasn't in a position where I was feeling like rewatching this game really tonight, but maybe I'll try to specifically find that clip because I do want to hear Clyde call him a mammal.
I mean, technically he is a mammal. So
we'll he is a mammal. We're all mammals. So really Clyde is not wrong here. Yeah. he's just mispronouncing the name.
Yeah.
So I know I said when we were discussing this before the segment, I said that I didn't have one to add to this, but I thought of one that sort of qualifies for this. There was in the first quarter and it was like much ballyhooed, especially in the post-game comments. I heard noted weird question asker Mark Berman asking it to Trier during the post-game. There was a sequence in the first quarter where Trier got the ball on the break, and this was like before Trier really started like lighting it up for the game and when Hardaway was like on fire. And Trier runs down, and instead of dumping it off to Hardaway, who was kind of trailing behind him on the fast break, he kind of like took it right into whoever it was there, and I think drew the foul and got the free throws, but you know, gave up an easy 2 points in favor of, you know, diving into someone else to try to, you know, get his own points. And Hardaway got really into Trier's face about it. So my kind of funny thing for the OT here is that Hardaway was kind of chiding him for doing a thing that Hardaway himself tends to do a decent amount of times. And I like personally tweeted about it and was like, yeah, Hardaway's getting in his face and like he kind of has every right to. And then like 10 people called me out and were like, yeah, but Hardaway does that all the time. Like he shouldn't really have any place to talk here. And I was like, you know what? You're right, guys. You guys are all right. Hardaway totally does that. And he doesn't really have any place to be yelling at Trier. That said, he still had the right to yell at him because it was still a stupid play. But maybe Hardaway should listen to his own advice a little bit sometimes, because he definitely gets that tunnel vision from time to time as well.
Yeah, I think there are always these little comments in games. Like I think I've heard it about Chris Paul a bunch of different times about how certain NBA players have been tested and their peripheral vision is almost, it's like out of this world. It's freakishly exceptional. And then I think if Hardaway and Trier were to be given that test, they would need like glasses on the side of their eyes or something, because they really just I don't think I've seen Trier pass on a fast break once this season. He only knows how to go right into the rim, and if there's someone in his way, he'll just go directly into them. So I think I stand with you, and I also stand with the responders that both those guys are guilty. All right, my last one was Knicks assistant coach Pat Sullivan. Hitting on Rebecca Harlow in the after halftime interview. I don't know if you caught this, but she asked him a question and he kind of answered the question. And he was like, oh yeah, we missed you and Mike in London. Did you guys forget your passports? And as someone who probably never feels comfortable just directly hitting on a girl and always has to be subtle about it, I recognized exactly what Pat Sullivan was doing. And I was like, all right, game, recognize game, Pat Sullivan. I don't think I would do it on MSG though, so I give him some credit, and also think it was a little weird simultaneously, but I guess I'm conflicted on it, but I thought it was funny overall.
You know, it's funny, maybe that's like a running joke now or something, because I'm fairly certain that Royal Ivy did the same exact thing in the last game.
Oh really?
I think he dropped the exact same line on her. It was like, oh, where were you for that last game? We missed you out in London or whatever.
Yeah,
or I forget, but there was that. And then I also got to say, these guys are all stepping into former assistant Josh Longstaff's territory.
What a name.
He and Rebecca used to always have the good chemistry. Like, yeah, they had the best interview chemistry. And these guys need to step off because, you know, I'm shipping for Rebecca Harlow and Josh Longstaff still.
Mm.
So,
yeah,
that's just me.
That's a great place to end the podcast. All right, that'll wrap up this edition of Locked on Knicks. Let us know what you think of overtime. Let us know what you think of this episode. And remember to drop in some questions for the mailbag. We'll be recording that over the weekend. We'll have another game recap for you before then, and maybe a special guest. We're still figuring that out. All that and more next time on Locked on Knicks.